Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. James is back. James, you were off golfing for the weekend. Didn't know you were a golfer.
I wasn't off golfing, Adrian. I was at the golf working on it for the last 5 days. So back today, back into reality. No more swanning around with multi-million pound golfers anymore.
And what does working at the golf entail? Is sitting in a truck somewhere, doodling on your phone?
Sitting in a cabin, actually, because of obviously all the COVID regulations. Nobody can be in one of our trucks anymore. So we're all in separate cabins in a TV compound for many, many hours during the day.
Okay. Anyway, it's back to the football for you and for all of us. Coming up, we'll be chatting to Ray Houghton and Guy Swindles about the Euros. Also, Noel King on a big win for his team Shelburne against Piemont. And Gary Rogers on the League of Ireland after weekend wins for Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers, Bohemians, Drogheda United and Derry City. And we'll be reflecting too on the First Division, where Shelburne continue to set the pace. So then, we're down to just four nations: Italy, Spain, England, Denmark. And I guess the big question, guys, Guy Swindles, we spoke to you last week. You were a little bit nervous about the Germany game. How are you feeling now?
Oh, I'll still be nervous. You've got to be nervous if you're an England fan, though. I'm a bit worried. The confidence is rising, and that's usually a sure sign that things are going to go horribly, horribly wrong. But seriously, Gareth Southgate is doing such an enormous amount right. I still have Italy as favourites to win this, unbeaten in 32 matches now, put out the world number one team in the last game. But England are doing absolutely superbly. They're improving as the tournament goes on. And more, I have to say, it is looking like an England-Italy final.
Ray Houghton, it's good to have you with us on the podcast. Is it coming home? Is it coming home to England?
Well, listen, I think they are certainly favourites to get to the final. When you look at the two teams that are involved, Denmark and England, there's no doubt that when you look at the squads, the way things have gone over the campaign so far, you would certainly say that England are the better side. Denmark have improved, you know, from the horrific game against Finland, you know, when Christian Eriksen had his cardiac arrest. The loss to Belgium, where they played very well for the first 45 minutes, and then Belgium bring on Kevin De Bruyne and he changes the game. And then after that, they've really, really, really improved. You know, great win in the last group stage game against Russia. And then they've gone on from there, strength to strength. So I think if you're a neutral, you'll certainly be a supporter of Denmark. But I just think England at Wembley will have a little bit too much for them.
And the fact that there's going to be a big crowd there as well, 60,000. And yet to concede, Ray, which is quite something in tournament football.
No, it's incredible, you know. And then, guys, you said there that I think Gareth, when he was picking his side early on, was getting a bit sick from the England fans because I think they wanted to see a more offensive lineup. And when they didn't see that, they were disappointed. But, you know, Gareth's got his tactics right, he's got his team selection right, he's changed it around from a back four to a back three. And it's worked seamlessly. I think the game against Ukraine, although I thought Ukraine was probably the poorest team in the last eight, he still had to win the game. And I thought they went about it the right way, got the goals at the right time. And if they really wanted to, I think they could have went on and scored a few more in that game. But yeah, gone very well for Gareth and the team. But they mustn't take this game lightly because, say, Denmark got momentum with them at the moment.
Come on to Denmark in just a moment. But Ray, in your opinion, is there any risks involved, you know, at a tournament in tweaking your system and maybe changing your team, bringing Mason Mount in, you know, mixing it up? Like, is there a danger that that kind of approach could backfire ultimately?
No, I don't think so, because I think with Gareth Southgate, he's looked at his squad and he's evaluated, you know, the players that he's got, and he probably feels that, you know, the depth is there. You know, Mason Mount's had an excellent season with Chelsea. He's predominantly playing with the two sitters in Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips. A lot of people were saying, you know, could you be a little more progressive and maybe in that area just play one and play another more offensive player, maybe a Jack Grealish. But he's a pragmatist. You know, he likes to keep, you know, that solid shape. You know, against Germany, I think it was, they had seven defenders, if you like. You know, they only had the three attackers. But they had the back five and the two second midfielders. So that gave them that shield that they weren't going to concede. But I think if you look into the England games as well at the moment, you were talking about Italy and the run that they've been on. But I think England have only conceded in about five games in the last 21, 22. You know, they've been very solid defensively. And that gives them a base to work from. And I think Gareth trusts his players. He's got great belief in the youngsters that when he puts them on, they'll do a job. And, you know, and it's worked very well for him so far.
And Guy, when we were talking last week on the podcast, we were, you know, discussing Harry Kane. We were wondering, you know, is, you know, his club situation, perhaps getting on top of him, all that, you know, that has to be resolved. But then bang, he hits the back of the net against Germany and a couple against Ukraine at the weekend. So he's in the right zone now, isn't he, to push on?
He really is. It's been interesting listening to the strikers queuing up, one, to defend Harry Kane when he wasn't scoring, and then saying he just needs one goal. And so it has proved. He got that one goal against Germany, and suddenly he was leading the line in an altogether different way. I think it's quite interesting as well what Gareth Southgate is doing to sort of support him. Raheem Sterling is also having a wonderful tournament. And he and Kane, the ball through to Kane for the first goal against the Ukraine was absolutely superb. And those two are now working better together as they've gone on in this tournament. And now this sort of rotating flair player, if you like. We've seen Saka play there. Jadon Sancho came in for the last game. Jack Grealish has started once as well. And that seems to be the way that Southgate is putting it up to make sure that Kane begins to fire. And once we know that once Harry Kane starts scoring goals, he tends to continue to do it. And England will be hoping that's the case. But I have to say, I've been really impressed with the players around him who have taken up the slack in the early part of the competition and are now turning into the providers as well.
Guy and Ray, even on this, do you think the way he's constantly changing his setup, it almost looks like he's working with a team in the league more than he does in international football. But the way he's changing his setup is meaning that other teams can't really go out and scout him.
I think that's a very good point. And I it's been fascinating to watch, because usually when teams have won tournaments in the past, there's a kind of set first 11 and then players have to come in and if there's injuries. But right from the get-go, Southgate's had a core of about 7 or 8 players who've played in every game, but the rest of it is a rotation, depending on who he's playing against. And also, as you rightly say, Denmark won't know if England are going to go 4 at the back or 5 at the back, or 3 at the back, if you like, for this next game. So it's very hard to plan ahead for it. You have to plan for every eventuality. And I think that's perhaps something we haven't seen very often before, but has been so impressive about the way Gareth Southgate has gone about this. This has been quite a cerebral, if you like, exercise.
Ray, you already referenced Denmark, and you know obviously they've got their own story to write, given all that happened on the opening weekend with Christian Eriksen. So they're on a journey. They're on their own journey. How do you think Denmark will approach the England game? Do you think they've enough about them to possibly topple England at Wembley?
I think that there's enough there, absolutely. I think one of their big things that they've got is this confidence and belief, you know, because I've got to be honest with you, you know, when you lose your first two games, you're probably thinking, well, I hope we don't get embarrassed, you know, and all of a sudden turned it around against Russia, a great win 4-1, gave them the 3 points and the positive goal difference that got them through to the last 16. But from then, the momentum's been with them. Really good performance against Wales. Then took it on to the quarter-final match where, you know, they beat the Czech Republic. Yeah, it was maybe in the balance occasionally, but I think they've got a really good, solid side, very good goalkeeper in Schmeichel. Dalsgaard has come on, and the position that Eriksen would have been in, he seems to be the playmaker, the go-to player to get on the ball. The wing-backs are getting forward to good effect. You've got that solidity with Delaney and Højbjerg in the middle of the park. And up front, you know, Poulsen scored a few. He got injured. Then Dahlberg came in. He scored, I think, 3 in his last 2 games. So they've got players on form. And if you look to their performances, it's getting better and better.
Guy, your thoughts on Denmark? Have you got to watch them a bit?
I have, and I've been really impressed. I think Ray's absolutely right. I think they've just got a solidity about them. And it's interesting that England are playing Denmark, two teams that have improved as this tournament has gone on. But you look at Delaney, you look at Højbjerg, you look at Larsen, that midfield is really, really strong. And with Dahlberg scoring goals as well, and Martin Braithwaite still to really come off, despite an awful lot of hard work. So I think that Denmark can well surprise England. But the fact is Gareth Southgate won't be taking them lightly. He'll be working on the players to make sure that they're in the right place for this. because you don't get into the last four of the Euros by accident. This is a really, really good side who have improved as the thing has gone on. Also, it's a bit like the forces with them as well. Ever since the Christian Eriksen thing, they have felt as if they are carrying everything forward for him, and it does seem as if that's working so well for them at the moment.
Yeah, team on a mission. James, you tipped England from the outset, so I guess you're not getting off the horse just yet.
No, I'm not. I think this is going to be their year. I think they've been so impressive throughout the entire tournament, as you've already mentioned. Ray mentioned as well, go back 22 games to see how many goals they've let in. I think with Denmark, obviously the Christian Eriksen thing kind of spurred them on through the group. I don't know if they will be at this stage almost emotionally drained from that. And that's the one mm-hmm. thing. When they step out in Wembley with the amount of fans at Wembley, that could either overcome them straight away, or we'll get a good game out of it. But I still can't see. I think England have the edge over them.
Okay. Ray, you reckon England will get to the final?
Yeah, I do. I put Italy-England final. You don't predict it, but you went through it all. So very early on, having watched the Italians, I think they're the best team that I've seen. Not just individuals, but as a team. When you think of the goalkeeper, defence, midfield and the attack, I think they all work in tandem really, really well. And I think England certainly have proved themselves. And yeah, it will be an emotional game against Denmark, that's for sure. But I think England, maybe a little bit more quality. I don't know if Wembley being 50,000 or whatever is going to be a help or a hindrance at the moment. I'm still 50-50 with that, because I've seen England players, and don't forget, there's not many of them that have been to this level. Not a lot have played in the Champions League, for example, you know, the likes of Rice hasn't, Phillips hasn't, you know, amongst others, you know. So there's a few of them have not got that experience. So I'd like to see how they handle when real pressure comes on them, because you're only like 90 minutes away from your first final since 66, you know. So it is absolutely huge. And I know there's an omen there, because in 66, it's the only other time that they've gone through the group stage without conceding the goal. So I know that omen's there for them. But it's how either team handles the pressure on Wednesday evening. That's what's going to be very interesting, is who starts well, who settles into the game, and who's not afraid to take the game by the scruff of the neck and go for it, because that's what you might need to do.
Yeah, Guy, that's a fair point, isn't it? Because obviously against Ukraine on Saturday night, the early goal from Harry Kane set the tone for the evening. But, I'm not saying a full house, but, you know, 50, 60,000 at Wembley. If things aren't going your way, it could become a difficult evening.
It could, but I'm getting a kind of different feeling in the country this time than perhaps in previous matches. For instance, the Germany match, there were 20,000 plus in for that one. England started slowly. Germany were the better team for the first 15, 20 minutes. But England built themselves into the match. The fans didn't lose heart. There wasn't you didn't feel that they were starting to go, not be behind the team. If anything, they just drew them on, pushed them on, and they just got better and better and finished that game superbly. So, yeah, I've been in England crowds when they've taken against the team. But I think on this occasion, with everything that's gone on as well, with COVID, call it what you will, that there is a positivity that perhaps we haven't seen from England fans in previous tournaments. And I think that I'd be surprised if they started taking against them in the semi.
Because England haven't conceded yet, we don't know what team they are when they go behind. So that's going to be the interesting factor. If they go 1-0 down to Denmark, what's this England team going to be like? Have they got the resolve to get back into it? That's the X factor, the thing that we don't know at the moment. And that will be interesting if that does go down that way on Wednesday.
I think the other thing there perhaps is the fact that England's bench is so strong. If they do get in trouble, they have so many players that they can bring on that have the potential to get them out of it. And that could be quite an interesting evening.
Well, it's certainly going to be a very interesting evening regardless. It's on Wednesday. But before that, Ray, you already mentioned you expect it to be, you know, the upshot to be an England-Italy final. But Italy-Spain is equally an enthralling match, isn't it? I mean, I know Spain have their detractors, but they've got a lot of quality. In the final third, they may lack that cutting edge up front. But what have you made of Spain so far in the tournament?
I've got to say, I'm really looking forward to this game, because I think technically it's going to be the game of the tournament. I think both these teams like to press high up the pitch. both of them have got tremendous courage to play out from the back. That won't faze them. They'll still do what they've been doing in all the previous games that they've been involved in. There's no doubt Spain have improved game on game. You know, the first two group matches they drew, you know, they were at 70% or whatever it was, possession against Sweden, couldn't score. Next game against Poland, it was very similar. They drew 1-1. And then a massive victory in the last match when needed against Slovakia. And then they've taken form into the next games, and it's been tough for them. But don't forget that they've had to go through 120 minutes of football twice. And another one of them, they had to win on penalties. So how taxing is that on the legs? How taxing is that mentally? Is that taking anything out of them going into this game? Whereas Italy have had such an easier run, if you like. The only real tough game they've had. Austria would have been the extra time, but obviously also against Belgium, which for me was, you know, technically a great game of football to watch. So the Italians have been good, the Spanish have been good, but who wins that battle higher up the field? That's got to be the determining factor who goes on to win.
And just on that match at the weekend, Italy overcoming Belgium, and it was an enthralling encounter as well, 2-1 for Italy with Barella and Insigne with that cracking goal. But just Belgium, Ray, so much expected of what, you know, was dubbed the golden generation of Belgian football. You know, all the names just trip off the tongue, including Kevin De Bruyne. But is it slipping away from Belgium now in terms of winning a major tournament?
Yeah, for me personally, yeah, I absolutely believe that. Because when you look at Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Vermaelen, you know, that's probably their last tournament. They might make the World Cup in 18 months' time, who knows. But, you know, the thing I was looking at was, where was the bench? Who are you bringing off, you know, to change the game? You had Nasser Chadli coming on, who's been around for a while. There was no one really who they could bring on. There was a young, you know, up-and-coming player to really make a difference for them. So I think there's other nations that have shown that their youth system is better at the moment. There's no doubt coming in at the tournament, Belgium are on a great run. You know, I think they equaled the record, and there were so many victories in a row. I think they won all 10 in the group stage and then won the first three or four in this competition. But then when they came up against the real team, Italy, I've got to say, I thought Italy were outstanding. And, you know, just for these Belgian players, you know, that number one tag of the best team in the world, it's been a burden for them because they haven't really reproduced it. When you look back at, yeah, they got to, you know, semi-final before, but, you know, got lost to Wales 5 years ago in this competition when, you know, they were nailed on favourites to go and win it. They haven't produced it at the right time.
Yeah. And Guy, just a word on France, came up short. Portugal also going out. Obviously, teams have to go out at some point. So much was expected of France.
Absolutely. Last week's podcast, everyone was saying all France have got to do is turn up and everyone else is just playing for the right to be beaten by France in the final. No one told Switzerland. And it's been a really interesting tournament in that case. I fancied Portugal. They got nowhere. We've seen France go out, and we're going to see another of the big boys go out at this semi-final stage. But although France aren't there, and France will have been disappointed, and Belgium with their golden generation, and England having had a supposed golden generation back in the noughties, with a very similar result to Belgium's, I still, as Italy, I just can't see past Italy. I think they're just playing so brilliantly. They've had that test against Austria when they didn't play well and still got through, and then in the match of the tournament to put out Belgium in the way that they did, you've got to bet against them is very, very difficult at the moment. And I, one, they're great to watch, and two, they're a fabulous side.
Well, four teams left, Ray. And obviously you've suggested it's, you know, in your view, it's going to be an England-Italy final. So if you had to pick, I know there's a lot of football still to be played, but the eventual winners, who would it be?
Yeah, I've gone for Italy. As I say, I just think they're the best team that I've seen as a group. There is an injury to Spinazzola, the fullback, which would be a worry. That would be my one concern. If he doesn't make it, you've got Emerson, the Chelsea fullback, coming in. That's not like for like, because he isn't as attack-minded. But the rest of it, I mean, I've got to say, Jorginho, I've just got a quick mention, Jorginho. I watched him at Chelsea, and he's a very good continuity player. He doesn't play like he's playing for Italy at the minute. He's been absolutely outstanding. You know, they're talking about Bonucci, Chiellini, and others inside. But Jorginho is the one constant that keeps the ball moving, getting into great defensive positions, starting attacks, closing down. He's the one that sets the tone. And I think he's been absolutely brilliant. And if he can continue that vein of form, then certainly it could be I think it's going to be a cracking game Tuesday against Spain. I really do. I think this is going to be probably could end up, or potentially could be the game of the tournament for me.
Well, it's certainly going to be fascinating, no doubt about it. Thanks to Guy Swindles and also to Ray Houghton. Now then, we're joined by Gary Rogers and Noel King. Noel, you had an eventful weekend in the Women's National League, 4-3 against Piemont. You were, 3-1 up, is that right? And Piemont got it back to 3-3 with a goal in injury time. And then Noel Murray came up with the winner, and you're top of the table. Nothing like a late winner, is there, in football?
It was absolutely incredible, yes. The blood pressure was going through the roof. the 100-odd people who were there were going ballistic, and it was just incredible seeing. I was delighted because, obviously, two very good teams, Piemont and Shell, have been battling each other over the years. And in fairness, Piemont had a standard follow-up. So to escape with such grit and drama was brilliant.
And I know it was a small crowd that was in, but it must have been great to have a crowd there for a match like that.
Yeah, well, it seemed like everybody in the crowd wanted to say. On the pitch, there was so much happening. There was commitment, there was tackles, there was great football, great goals, controversy, you name it. And it was, just a typical top of the table match. Well, it wasn't really typical, it was exceptional.
And it is very tight now at the top of the table because your team, Shelburne, 28 points, but 11 games played. Piemont on 25 points, so 3 points down, but they have a game less played. So it's very, very tight, isn't it? And obviously you've got Wexford Youths right on the coattails of both Shells and Piemont, back in third place on 24, so it's a fascinating table.
Yeah, it is, and we're enjoying it. It's spell there, but no doubt Piemont will win at the weekend. We're idle, and that should level things out. It was crucial for us in that regard, because had we lost, we would be 6 points behind them, and then it was out of our hands. The losing or the winning of it now back firmly in our hands and Piemont's hands, and that's the nice way to be. Yeah, great.
Is it disappointing that you're not out next weekend because, the momentum and the confidence and the buzz in the camp after a win like that, you'd like to carry
that? Well, I know Piemont were out from June the 5th, hadn't played. I don't know whether that had an impact on them, though I thought he played quite well. The way I'm feeling now is I'd like to calm down and try. It was so traumatic. Maybe I'm just getting old, but I'd like to calm down, take a little bit of a break and get going again.
Yeah. And you've made a significant signing today, Caoimhe Keenan. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, she's been with the club before. She's met all the girls know her. She's trained us on occasion. An international player and brings strength to the group. And hopefully we'll have chances to win it out in the end.
I should just give the rest of the results over the course of the weekend. Cork City 1, Bohemians 0, Becky Caston. So 12 matches in, and Cork have their first win. As we mentioned, Shells with that 4-3 win at Talca Park over Piemont. Also over the course of the weekend, Galway 0, DLR Waves 2, both goals scored by Katie Malone, and Wexford United, or rather Wexford Youths, keeping tabs on the top two by beating Treaty United by 2-1 at Ferry Park. There's still quite a distance to go, Noel, in the league title race, but you're right there. Can you maintain that? It's a real challenge to keep it going, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, that is the challenge, and I know Pima with James O'Connor have managed it over the last number of years. It's fantastic to be involved in it. A great level. The level's getting better with women's football. And you never know. We'll see how it goes.
Because you've been involved for so many years. I mean, obviously, you had your job with the FAI and the under-21s. But in terms of the women's national team, you were there as well. Have you seen progression over the, say, the last decade even?
Unquestionably. I was involved with the women's development plan, if you like, putting it together a number of years ago. And, when you get these players in for international training, you compare them to today, that just general conditioning alone is massively different. Also, the technique, the ability, you can see it coming. The instinctiveness of playing football every day, every week, is now growing. And women's football is getting better all over the world, in fact. So it doesn't make international football any easier.
Well, well done on the weekend's result. Big win for Shelburne, but Piemont, I'm sure they'll have something to say in the title race. Noel is going to stay with us. We're also joined by Gary Rogers. Gary, you were at a match over the course of the weekend. Bowes 3, St Pat's 2. And I mentioned eventful, the match at Tulka Park, but that was pretty eventful with Pat's ending up with 9 players and Bowes responding after a heavy defeat in Sligo at the Showgrounds last weekend with an important 3 points. What kind of game was it?
Yeah, it was a really good game. Obviously, there was plenty of action with the number of yellow cards and then obviously you've got a high number of goals as well. I think Bowes were full value for the win. Obviously, Pat's indiscipline really cost them in the game. Like, they picked up a lot of yellow cards in the first half with Sam Bone and Lee Desmond and Burmo all on yellows, and that's difficult when you're facing Bohemians attack because they all look very lively, and Ross Tierney, Liam Burt, Dawson Devoy pulling the strings in there, and as Georgie Kelly is scoring plenty of goals. So Bowes were very impressive and coming into form. I suppose the surprise from Bowes was the result against Sligo the previous week. I wasn't expecting a result like that, but they were terrific. It was a really enjoyable game the other night.
Yeah, do you think discipline is an issue for Pats? Because obviously they had Alfie Lewis red card at the week before and 2 at the weekend, Lee Desmond and Ian Birmingham, or is it just one of those things?
Well, I think discipline is an issue. You look at the amount of yellow cards, if you tot them up, like, there's so many cards in one game. And that costs you, because Pats don't have the biggest squad. They've lots of really talented young players coming through, and they had plenty of them on the bench. But when you're losing players, I know John Mountney and Griffin and Coughlin were all in the stand with injuries, so their squad is not that, I suppose, heavy in terms of depth. But they've terrific young players coming through the academy there. But you can't afford to be picking up that amount of yellows because that will cost you at some stage. And in the game itself, obviously, to get 2 players sent off is a sign of indiscipline in itself,
Well, apart from the match at Dalyman Park with Bowes beating St Pat's by 3-2, elsewhere, Derry City overcame Waterford by 2-0 at the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium. Evan McLaughlin, one of the new signings on professional terms, on the score sheet. Joe Thompson also scoring. Drogheda came from behind to beat Finn Harse by 3-1. And Shamrock Rovers with a very important win over Dundalk by 3-1. We'll come back to that very shortly. And then on Saturday night, a Jordan Gibson penalty gave Sligo Rovers a 1-0 win over Longford Town at Bishopsgate. You must have been delighted, James, to see Derry City with that 2-0 win over Waterford. And Evan McLaughlin, a new name to a lot of us, getting on the score sheet.
It's great as well. As he said, he was part of the triplet of fellas who got a professional contract the other day. Great way to sign off and to get your goal as well against Waterford, a team that, in fairness, done quite well against this year. I see Mark Bertram had a couple of comments after it, how his build-up to the game was affected by the FEI and not registering players quick enough. But that's a good result. It's another quality result for Rory Higgins. And it just gets Derry back on winning ways again. Really, really good.
Yeah. And we'll come on to the Shamrock Rovers one in just a moment, Gary, but obviously, Drogheda, very good win to come from behind against Finn Harps. Sligo Rovers with a 1-0 win over Longford Town. So Drogheda hanging on in there because they had a bit of a sticky spell a few weeks back, but they've come through it, and that was an important win. And the fact that they had to come from behind as well. So credit to Tim Clancy and Drogheda.
Yeah, no, Tim's been doing a terrific job. And Drogheda have been picking up wins and they've been scoring plenty of goals, which is a great sign for a team that comes up. Because they've been scoring goals, they have that confidence that, if they do go a goal behind, they know there is goals in the team, and they've been coming from all over the place. And Doyle is obviously banging in plenty of them as well. But you had Dane Massey and defenders like Danny O'Reilly popping up with goals as well. And Drogheda have been, terrific this season. They've played really well. I think, the result against Shamrock Rovers to go away to Tallaght and get a point off the back of a defeat from 2 defeats between Bowes and Dundalk is really good for them. And they've been terrific, I suppose, for a team that comes up, and Tim's done a great job there.
Yeah. And James, Sligo Rovers with a 1-0 win over Longford Town. Longford struggling at the foot of the table, but Sligo Rovers staying the pace in terms of at the top end of the table with Shamrock Rovers joint
top.
Yeah,
that's the kind of result we actually need. We need the two or three teams at the top of the league battling out and not letting anybody drift away from them. But for Longford, poor Dara. Dara's doing nearly everything right, and it's just losing by one goal here or one goal there. And as you said, Saturday night's a penalty, and it just feels really, really poor for him. They're only sitting on 9 points. We're now halfway through the season. But going back to Drogheda, they're on 29 points at the minute. So based on the last time we had a full season, which was in 2019, that's them safe if the points were to rectify themselves around that. And that would have been part of their job this year, just to be safe in the league, make sure they win this league for next year. But the job, that Tim is doing there is just wonderful. I think he's been the manager of the season so far.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
That's 100%. I think he has. They're fifth position. They're a point off Bohemians in fourth. And just the way they're grinding out results, they're making it hard for everybody else. I think they've been really, really good. I like watching them as well. I think they're really good to watch as well.
Noel, obviously you still keep tabs on the League of Ireland. What have you made of the season so far?
Well, I was surprised to see Rovers drop a couple of defeats over the last couple of weeks. A great start for Finn Harps and Ollie. I always think Ollie does a marvellous job up there. And he seemed to do the work early on now, and they're maybe sliding down a bit, but hopefully they'll be able to get enough points as well. But the standard is obviously very, very high. Three teams now battling it out at the top, maybe a little bit more. And once you have that, well, then you have more exciting games throughout the year.
That was a big win for Shamrock Rovers, wasn't it, Gary, against your old team, Dundalk, 3-1, because they fell behind, and obviously it was an error by Richie Towell on his debut that, you know, led to the first goal scored by Dundalk in the match. But they responded very well, Shamrock Rovers, to win. So a very important 3 points. And of course, they've been great rivals over the last few seasons, Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no love lost there, that's for sure. And I suppose you had that extra spice with Richie playing for Shamrock Rovers and Sean Gannon and Sean Hoare, I suppose. So it's a huge win for them, because like the form, although they're top of the table, there's nobody kind of raving about the football they're playing at the minute. And I think Richie will be a very interesting signing for them, see how he settles into it. And, they just need to kind of, I suppose, get the problem they've had, they've dropped points with, you would expect them to be winning games. And early in the season, they were picking up them late goals and picking up the wins. So they've yet to hit top gear. But you'll often find when teams go into Europe and they play against really high level of opposition, which they will in Slovan Bratislava, that tends to bring teams on when you're playing against that level of opposition every week. If they can go through a couple of rounds, that will help them and will help their form coming out of Europe as well.
What do you think, Richie Towell, what difference do you think he'll make to Shamrock Rovers? What will he bring to the table, given that you
played with him for so many years? Yeah, I think he's kind of a combination maybe of Aaron and Jack, in terms of he will get goals and he has that energy in midfield that Aaron would have. And Richie, look, he scored 27 goals from midfield the season, and then he went away. So I think it'll be interesting to see what blend, I suppose, Stephen Bradley comes up with in terms of the midfield players and how he goes about blending them in together and, you know, getting the right formation in order to, I suppose, get the most out of the midfield, because he's got plenty of midfielders in there, but he has lost two massive players from Aaron and Jack. And I think, you know, we're really seeing this season the difference or the loss that Jack has been in terms of what he did for that team last year and the previous season.
Okay, well, let's hear from Stephen Bradley, the Shamrock Rovers manager. He was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue after the game on Friday night against Dundalk.
Look, where we are on the table doesn't really concern me at this moment in time. There's a long way to go, but the performances have been good. We just haven't matched that with results. And tonight we got both. We got the performance and we got the results. So looked more like ourselves tonight in every aspect.
Didn't make it easy for yourselves in a way, conceding so early.
Yeah, we give away a really poor goal. If it was a foul or not, I don't know. But we give away a poor goal and then Alan makes a great save to keep us in the game at that stage. And then from there on, there was only one team really that was going to win.
Richie Towell's debut tonight, and I suppose he was involved in the concession of the first goal. He was dispossessed. How disappointed would he be with tonight, do you think?
Yeah, no, he'll obviously be disappointed. But we said before the game, he hasn't played a game in quite some time. So you could see it took him a bit to get into the game, but Richie is going to be a fantastic player for us. He's a leader. He'll score goals for us, and he gives us a different dimension. And it's important to get that hour into him, because we need to get him up to speed very quickly.
But then you were able to bring on Danny Mandrew, Dylan Watts and Liam Scales, who started the game, of course, had a terrific man of the match performance.
Yeah, our bench was obviously strong again tonight, and you can see we haven't had that in quite some time. So it was nice to be able to bring Joey and Dylan and Danny on. And it's important to have that quality, because between now and the end of the season, it's going to be big games, and we need everyone.
The week ahead is a big one, European football coming up, of course, so I suppose it's the perfect springboard for that in many ways.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a difficult game. They're a good side, obviously. They dominate Slovakian football, and we know that. We've watched them quite a bit the last week. It's a difficult game. It's a hard task, but we go there with a game plan, and we look forward to it.
That's Stephen Bradley speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. Noel, for a club like Shamrock Rovers or any of the League of Ireland clubs, and I'll ask Gary this as well, switching from the league, from the domestic league campaign into European football, How big a change is that, or you know, what's the methodology behind all of that in terms of preparation?
Well, there's a lot of different problems that can occur and a lot of different opportunities. Obviously, if you're playing against a higher standard and you get used to raising your game, that can be helpful. It also brings problems with travel, injuries, disappointments sometimes. And you know, it's great to be involved. Everybody wants to be involved, but it does bring problems, and certainly it can affect performances when you get back into your domestic games.
And it's a tough one, isn't it, Slovan Bratislava, away in the first
They're all
leg.
Tough, you know, coming from the League of Ireland, every single game you would play, there's not one you can go and say, we're just going to roll over them, and that's just the standard and the levels that you're going to play in.
Yeah, Gary, for you, I guess every player thrives on playing in European football.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Europe is the... I suppose it's the major bonus that League of Ireland players have, that they go and play in European competitions every year if you can get into them, obviously, and to go and test yourself. And it'll be a real test for Shamrock Rovers, because obviously you played against Slovan and Bratislava a couple of years ago, and they still have some of the players there that were on the books at that time, and these are a really slick outfit, and they've got massive resources as well at the club. But no, they're a team that are expecting to get to group stages. They got to group stages in 2019, I think it was, off the back of beating us. Now, I know they lost out last year, but, you know, that opposition, you know, that's who you want to be playing against, and you raise your game, and you've seen it over the last number of years that, you know, League of Ireland teams raising the game to play against European opposition and acquitting themselves very well.
Yeah, and how disruptive is it, or is it just part of the challenge, you know, having matches, say, midweek, travelling to, in this case, Bratislava, say when you were with Dundalk, having matches coming thick and fast in Europe and then maybe domestically. I know that Shamrock Rovers or any of the clubs that are in Europe this weekend don't have matches domestically, but in, you know, in terms of just changing from one competition to another, is that a challenge that, you know, players welcome?
Yeah, well, look, it is difficult. I think, you know, this week will be fine for them because, you know, the league games are gone, and that's ideal in terms of preparation, because in a lot of cases, players are having to kind of do a lot of work in getting familiar with the opposition. And you know, when you're playing League of Ireland players, I won't say you don't need to do as much of it, but you're more familiar with the players that you're going to be playing against week in, week out. But now it's the case of getting familiar with all the opposition and the subs and what their strengths and weaknesses are. So there's a lot of prep goes into European games and just getting familiar with the opponents, not only how they play, but then how you're going to play and put your game plan into action as well. So this week will be good in terms of preparation, but it is when you go down and you get a couple of wins under your belt possibly, and then, you know, the league games are thrown in on top of it, that's when it does become more difficult, and that's where you tend to see League of Ireland teams dropping points in the league in order to kind of, I suppose, maintain that European push.
That's on Wednesday, Slovan Bratislava against Shamrock Rovers, and the other three clubs in Europe in action on Thursday. Sligo Rovers away to Icelandic opposition in FH, and Bowes also in Iceland to take on Starnan. James, Icelandic football is of a decent standard, isn't it?
It is, yeah, but we've already played these two sides in Europe before. Shamrock Rovers bet Stargen 2-0 over the two legs. I think it was a Graham Burke goal in the first leg, and then Gary Shaw, I think, scored the second leg for them to win 2-0 in the tie. Gary will remember Half an Orger when they played them. Dundalk, they were through on away goals. I think Dave McMillan scored two goals in the second leg to put them through. Tight little outfit, but yeah, we've had good results against Icelandic teams. So yeah, I think both teams will be looking for just a steady result out there, and then obviously Bowes need to get Sturgeon back for that game in the Aviva, which amazingly, I think this is probably the quickest 6,000 tickets to sell out for a League of Ireland game in a long, long time. So that'd be good to have some fans there as well.
And Dundalk at home, Gary, to Newtown, 5:45 on Thursday at Oriel Park. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think, look, Dundalk's opposition, look, even form aside, I'd still expect Dundalk, you know, to win this tie, because obviously you've got that European experience, you've got players there who know how to perform at that level, and you know, anything other than a Dundalk win would be hugely disappointing. You know, a team that's not back in season yet in Newtown, and that's always a bonus when you look at the draw for Europe. You want a team that's in pre-season as opposed to a team that's in their season. I know that the Sligo and Bowes, the Icelandic league is up and running. They're 10 games in, so that'd be a real kind of fair test for both clubs, if you like. But you would expect Dundalk to beat Newtown, you know, given the level of performances even last year, you know, in Europe, and a team that's, I suppose, well used to performing at that level.
Yeah, and Noel, as well as all of that, the fact that there's no, the away goals thing is gone, that's been binned. Is that a good thing in your view, or will you miss it?
I miss it, I think. I think it's always good to, you know, when you get an away goal, it gives you an extra bit of confidence. It can certainly brighten the game up, but you'll take chances to try and get that goal. I don't know why they changed it, to be totally honest with you. I also think another significant thing in these qualifiers is trying to maintain the rankings for the Irish clubs, that, you know, the more wins you can get, the more draws that you can get, just adds, keeps continually adding to it. And hopefully someday, you know, we can go right up the scales and go directly into qualification.
Gary, are you disappointed that they've done away with the away goals rule?
Yeah, I am, because I think it brings an interesting dynamic, you know, to the European competitions. I think you'll probably end up having lots of penalty shootouts now, which is also interesting, I suppose, for the neutrals more so than the teams playing it. But yeah, I think, look, I've obviously been on the wrong and the right end of them away goals rule. Like, I remember we played for St. Pat's in 2000, and I think it was 2009, where we beat Croyle Sovetov. We got two away goals over there and went through in away goals, and it was an unbelievable achievement at the time. But the away goals, it certainly adds something to the kind of tension that there is around European games, and they're all finely balanced, and mistakes, I suppose, are punished to the maximum, and you've got to, you know, I suppose, take your opportunities in them games and play to your absolute maximum to get results. And I think, you know, away goals was an interesting dynamic, you know, in the European competitions. And I think, I don't know, we'll see how this year goes, but I think it's probably worth revisiting after the season, because it was certainly, it heightens the intensity in the games.
Okay, well, a check now on the results from the First Division over the course of the weekend. Joe Doyle scoring twice for Bray in a 2-1 win over Cove Ramblers. Cork City 2, Treaty United 3. Treaty continuing their super season. Shelburne 1, Cabinteely 0, top of the table. UCD 0, Galway United 2, Keating and Waweru. And great game between Wexford and Athlone Town, 4-4. Athlone 2-0 down, 3-1 down and 4-2 down. They drew 4-4. Adam Wickstead and Shane Barnes scoring late goals for Athlone. So, Noel King, Shelburne top of the Women's National League and Shelburne's men's team top of the First Division. All is going very well at Tulke Park these days.
All is going great. I've seen the goal that beat Cabinteely, the OG, which was an extraordinary one, the 91st minute. But sometimes you need all that sort of stuff. When you see them as signs, you hope that you can continue the momentum. And they're playing very well, and hopefully they go and win it.
Okay, well, certainly they're looking very good at the moment. Noel, what have you made of the Euros? We were chatting with Guy Swindles and Ray Houghton a little bit earlier on. Have you enjoyed the tournament?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I haven't seen as many matches as I would have liked, but certainly the group of death of France and Hungary and Portugal, Germany was magnificent. I thought they were great games. And then I think, like everybody, you're looking at the English, how they're getting on, that they're coming home and all that sort of nonsense. But there is a special link for myself to it with Rice and Grealish, who both played at the under-21s. I would know them over the years, two good young players. And, you know, you're saying they might be the first former Irish international players to win European medals. So it has a special interest for me. They're doing really well.
Yeah, Declan Rice has really prospered. Obviously, Jack Grealish as well. Like, when he's on song, he's some player.
Yeah, and he was like that as a young lad too. You know, he glides along the park, he goes by players, he loves to attack, he loves to play. And now he's either filling out and straightening out and playing better players. He's really developing into a top-class player. I didn't probably think he would do that so quickly, but he's done it. And the same with Declan. Declan was a little bit younger, of course. I think he started centre-half with Chelsea and was coming through the academy, and they released him. So, you know, you talk about late developers, he might be just considered in that bracket as well, but he's turned things around, and, you know, every club now in England appears to want him. So he's doing fantastically well.
Gary, it's hard to watch Jack Grealish and Declan Rice and not think, oh, if only. If only Declan Rice had put on an Irish jersey. Oh, actually, yeah.
It's great to see the Irish lads doing so well for England, isn't it?
Just like their cricket.
I think Grealish, Grealish is a fantastic player. And I think if England are to go on and win it, I think they've kind of got to, I suppose, loosen up in terms of, you know, the two defensive midfielders. I'd like to see Grealish play in the team, wherever that, you know, he can be accommodated, because he brings that added added spice that you're going to need if it's going to beat an Italian or a Spanish team, and obviously to get through Denmark as well. But I just think that Grealish, when he's come in and played, he's looked different gravy, to be honest with you, and I think he's a real top player.
Yeah, do you think, Noel, that I'm not suggesting you should advise Gareth Southgate or anything like that, but do you think England should let him off the leash and let him out there?
I don't think he'd. you don't let him off the leash. Just put him in the squad, and he will certainly get off the leash himself. The hardest thing to get Jack to do is to defend and play that role with defence in his mind. But when he's free, he's a free spirit. He's capable of going by people, creating chances, getting taken out for penalties, free kicks, and he gets back up again and goes again. And you know, he's really an excellent player, and he's a huge threat. You know, I think about the decisions the two lads had to make, deciding to go for Ireland, and the bit of stick they got. But you can be sure, them, their agents, their family, they're fully vindicated, and they'd be well pleased with the choices they made.
And did you see the potential in Declan Rice at that early age? Because obviously people were talking about him from a long way out.
Yeah, Declan, they all played ahead of their time, ahead of their age group, so from that regard, they were obviously doing something special to be elevated a little bit higher earlier. You can't say for sure anybody's going to make the grade, but they certainly had talent. They were playing all the time. And they're certainly, their careers ahead of them now are just going to be immense.
Mm. Will England win it, Noel? What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Denmark, if they get by Denmark and get to the top, it's certainly depends. Is it going to be Italy? Is it going to be Spain? I think they could win it. I think they actually could.
Yeah.
Hard and all as it is to say.
And Gary, where do you sit on the eventual winners?
I think Italy have looked as if they can get by Spain, it's hugely difficult obviously to beat Spain and then to beat either England or Denmark in the final. But Italy have looked the most complete package. I think they have a better balance in terms of being defensively very good. They've had a run of clean sheets, obviously, through the group stages and in the build-up to Euros. But, you know, they've been, their midfield and the goals they've been getting from all over the pitch, I think they've just looked the more complete team. And I think, you know, that system of England with the two defensive midfielders, if they go a goal behind, how will they react and the pressure? Because, I suppose semi-finals and finals, it does come down to who handles that pressure. And if you can ask the questions, and if they were to go a goal down, it'd be just interesting to see how they react, because they haven't had to do that, whereas the Italians have in the run-in. So, Italy would be my team, just in terms of I think they've a better balance, in the whole squad.
And overall, Noel, in terms of the tournament, have you noticed anything in particular that's different about this tournament? I mean, some people have said that maybe there's not enough, or there isn't as many individual stars. I mean, obviously you've got your Mbappes and your Ronaldos, but that the onus and the emphasis is much more on the collective for so many teams. You know, you see it with the likes of Denmark, and obviously to a greater extent probably England, in terms of it's all about the group dynamic as opposed to individual brilliance necessarily.
I think the game has gone forward again, and I think you have more better players involved in the 11s, and I think the standard of the game is certainly focusing on attack as well as defence and defending, and all teams are now capable of going through all the phases of the game, and for me it's a far better product than it was maybe 10 years ago. I think the game is improving. It's certainly something you'd sit down and you'd look at maybe 8, 9 of the teams and say, I like looking at them and I want to watch them.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, lads, many thanks. Lots of football to look forward to over the course of the week. Obviously, both of the European semi-finals are live on RT2 television, with the Italy-Spain game on Tuesday, followed, of course, by England against Denmark on Wednesday evening, both games kicking off at 8 o'clock. Thanks to Noel King and also to Gary Rogers. James, as ever, many thanks to you. And we'll talk again next week. And, of course, also thanks a little earlier to Ray Houghton and Guy Swindles. Until the next time, from us all, bye-bye.